Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Welcome to NatureBack Podcast, where we speak with investors and entrepreneurs about the green future. Today, I'm meeting in Bangkok, John Fall from Atlas Capital. John, tell a little bit about background story of Atlas Capital. How did you guys set up the venture?
Sure. So I've started Atlas Capital 2 years ago, based in Southeast Asia for the past 10 years. After exiting my first baby, my first startup, I had a chance to really think, okay, what's next? What do I really care about? And through the collisions of several people that I've met that were very meaningful interactions, connections, discussions, we got to realize that it was the right time for finance to collide with hard tech. And to look at hard problems like climate change and adaptation. So it's how Atlas got to emerge out of the ground during that COVID period. We've been doing a very small first fund, which was basically a bunch of SPVs together, investing in US companies. Initially, it was just my money, and then a few of my friends joined in. And now we're looking to do a little bit larger fund to be able to do more deals. But in the meantime, we're trying to build an ecosystem of climate technology in Southeast Asia because it's a very new category for this region, but it's also one of the regions where this can be the most meaningful, right? Biodiversity in the region, and it's also one of the regions that will be the most impacted by climate change. So it's a very relevant narrative here.
And also adaptation is probably something this region can teach to the other parts of the world. You know, the temperatures outside are such that for a Nordic person like me, it's relatively challenging to live with in a climate like this.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this aircon is running all the time here. So this is a form of adaptation. But when we think about adaptation, there's a lot more that the region isn't prepared, right? An example is last month, we had some of the largest recorded weather event in the history. We had a heat wave with nearly 52 degrees Celsius of perceived heat. 52, right? You're in the middle of the Sahara Desert, right? And so that was like in May, right? So the population had to first realize that it's going to happen maybe more frequently on the years to come, but also what are the ways to adapt to this, right? So of course there is drought, right? Of course there is climate, air cons, what else, right? And so it's one of the regions that is going to be facing a lot more weather events. It's forecasted, it's admitted. Now, what do we do for that? How do we continue living? How do we protect health? How do we protect habitations? How do we protect cities? But also, how do we protect the nature, right? Our agricultural assets, food productions, etc. There's a lot of money to be lost. But also, I believe, and I think with Atlas Capital and my partners, we all believe together that there's a lot of money to be made helping all these infrastructure to adapt to climate change as well.
Exactly. When the world is changing, there is a big opportunity for entrepreneurs and investors also.
Absolutely.
The other part is, of course, the rising sea levels. I mean, most of Bangkok will be underwater sooner than people actually realize.
Yeah.
Probably this part where we're sitting too. So building dams, what Holland has been doing through centuries probably is probably one of the solutions, but there must be other solutions too.
Yeah. Holland is a very inspiring country for Thais, but also for Indonesians and Vietnamese. In fact, we hear that Bangkok will be underwater, but Ho Chi Minh City and Jakarta are going to be underwater in the same time, or probably faster as well. So it's very interesting. If you Google this, you can see the graphs and the actual maps. They are very much in the same situation. In fact, Jakarta is being moved. The capital of Indonesia is being moved 100 kilometers away to create a new capital from scratch right now to be able to adapt to this climate change effect of, you know, sea rising. So it's not just Bangkok. It's three of the mega cities in the region, and of course you can actually already see this. So it's not like the sea is coming, you know, and like a water wall type of movie. It's more episodes, right? So twice, three, four times a year, you can see this street is flooded, right? It's just happening for one day, two, 3 days, right? And then the water get back, and then there's another flood, but it's just episodes, right? What is the actual sea rise that we are observing here is the frequency of these episodes increasing. And that's what's damaging. Well, it's not if the water was here all the time, we just build on top of it, right? Or we build floating houses, right? It's fine. The issue is when it's not. So it's kind of lets you think that you can just build a house here and then the water comes. and it's a bit disturbing because you're not sure if you should stay or you should leave, right? That's like that boiling frog type of situation where you don't really realize the heat is heating up, right? But it is, right? And so that's the boiling frog situation, right? So here you have an episode of sea rise coming in for 1 or 2 days. If, oh, it's fine. You still buy a new house or you still build a new condo. And that's what we're seeing in Ho Chi Minh City, Jakarta and Bangkok, right? Even though the frequency of sea rising and floods episodes is going to increase, we still see a lot of buildings, right? You were here the past few days, right? It's how many buildings can you see, right? And so I think the really interesting opportunity here is how do we make those buildings flood-proof, right? How do we make the actual structure to be resilient to floods, to sea rise? So even if there's, you know, more frequencies of those weather events and floods, how can those buildings still exist? Right. So there's a lot of concepts that will emerge. I'm pretty sure at some point we'll see bridges between buildings, you know, or maybe what we see today.
I saw in one of the sky rises a bridge between.
Yes, for example, but also simply the BTS. Right. We have very strong infrastructure thanks, you know, to the BTS company, BTS group. They have built very strong infrastructure and that doesn't exist in Ho Chi Minh City. For example, right? So you have that high rise infrastructure where people can, there's walkway everywhere, right? Mm. So that's maybe how this thing gonna evolve, right? Having those walkway that actually flood proof, right? When it's flooding, everybody takes the BTS, no more car. Even better for the pollution, no traffic jam, right? So that's some form of adaptation that we can see in those countries, and it's very interesting to observe.
Is it only concepts or do you see already startups emerging to work on the solutions?
Unfortunately, not as much. I think the hype, you know, we're still talking a lot about crypto here. We're still talking about e-commerce and fintech, right? Because, you know, we don't know if there is money in climate, right? It's not like in the US or in Europe where it's very obvious, very clear that there's a lot of dry powder, a lot of venture capitals throwing money into climate tech. Here is none, right? We were the first one to talk about this stuff 2 years ago. So now there's a few more players that are, you know, coming in and starting to, you know, step by step. Oh yeah, maybe we do tech and crypto, but also sustainability, right? We start to see conglomerates jumping in and start to say, oh, we're actually going to invest in Southeast Asia. But all those conglomerates have been heavily investing in US and Europe for the past 10 years already. Mm. And so for us, what we see is it's going to take time for this actually founder market to build up in Southeast Asia, right? It's going to take a few years, probably five plus years to be something with enough deals. But in the meantime, there's two opportunities. Number one is to invest in US or European companies and help them to expand here, because we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Some solutions that are highly, you know, scalable, engineered, checked, and scientifically checked are ready to be deployed here. Exactly. So that's direct impact you can do. And we really believe in that transfer. And the second thing is venture building, right? So working with conglomerates, etc., to venture build solutions that could be really commercialized very quickly here. So I think these are the immediate opportunity for this market. Waiting for a good batch of founders locally to start to realize this is the next big thing. So this is kind of where we've been playing as well.
Exactly. I think the technology transfer is a really interesting thing. And you guys have been investing in a few US companies so far. You're already taking them here or taking the technologies here? Or?
Well, we're a very small firm, you know, it's like two guys and a bunch of analysts with, you know, not much resources. But I think the network we have is incredible. I think between our advisors and between of the people that I've had the chance to talk with during my research for my book, we have a lot of connections. And yes, indeed, we see a lot of interesting innovations. And since I've been here in this market for the past 10 years, I got the chance to work with some conglomerates, got the chance to work with to have some big families to support my businesses. And so now it's all about reconnecting the dots, but not on e-commerce anymore, on this climate tech adaptation journey, right?
Because I think this transfer thing has a huge potential, because this is the region which is often seen as the most or the first hit by the climate change. And we have a lot of companies, for example, in Northern Europe, building climate solutions, which, you know, in the countries which actually benefit from climate change. However weird it is to say that, but there are few Nordic countries who actually will be benefiting from climate change when the rest of the world is, you know, going down.
Yeah, so exactly. So this is a paradox we observe, right? Like it is like clean air, clean water, you know, all these floating farms, all this stuff is invented in markets that don't really need it. Like the actually marginal efficiency increase that these products will bring to this market in Europe is insignificant, right? And but that technology behind it is incredible, right? This is years and years of government money to develop those patents, right? To create those engineers, those scientists, right? That Southeast Asia will just never have, right? It's probably 30 years, 50 years of government investments, subsidies, etc., to create those scientists to be able to come up with this stuff, right? But actually, the actual market might not be in Europe. Might be in the emerging market, might be specifically and very often in Southeast Asia. And that's what we see, that's what we believe in. So one of our advisor and partner is actually based in Vancouver, Kuka, and she's been looking at all these innovations, you know, clean air, clean water in Canada, which have the cleanest air and the cleanest water, right? But she's Thai. And then she connects to that. She's like, why is this thing not in my hometown, in my home country, where the pollution is so bad, where the water is so bad, right? And so that's where all these things came in. And we thought there's an actual very unique mandate here that can have a lot of impact. And so that's where we decided to team up together. And we think what we do makes a lot of sense. Now, you know, we're very young. We're emerging fund managers. You know, we don't have a multi-billion dollar balance sheet behind us.
Next fund.
But we know some companies who does, and that's why we're trying to connect with them and work together to achieve that goal now.
I think the call here to all the climate tech founders listening is to check out the Southeast Asian markets, because they could be really good market for your solutions.
Absolutely.
Even though maybe the average GDP per person is somewhat lower than in Northern Europe, but it would make for your solutions, there would be so much more demand here.
Absolutely. And in fact, we've got a good group of investors and conglomerates who believe the same. And they're eager to welcome these solutions. So last month, we created a coalition with more than 20 of these conglomerates. And all these conglomerates, they have venture investment arms, and these family offices, they also invest. So they're really eager to bring those innovations here. So together with those 20 conglomerates, they committed $1.2 billion, right, across all their different corporate venture capital funds. So there's real money here that is ready to be invested in solutions if they are relevant for them, right? So with that firepower, I think showcasing that this exists, I think this should be really attracting a lot of companies. And so through this platform, which we have called the Southeast Asian Climate Tech Coalition, we're aiming to facilitate that. In fact, we're aiming to bring more and more of these delegations to make that connection. We are going to announce very soon a big campaign to really showcase those innovations who successfully enter this market thanks to the coalition. And we are opening a Slack group where all these startups can join, apply, and instantly connect to those 20 conglomerates. Plus, there's nearly another 100 investors in that group. And so that's invitation only, because we really want the quality funded company with TLR maybe after three to six that are actually commercializable to be able to join. But this is something we kicked out. So check out the Southeast Asia Climate Tech Coalition.
Good. We will add the links to the show notes for listeners to check out. Companies in the climate tech scene, what kind of maybe subcategories, or as you said, the fund itself is relatively small these days, so probably the relatively early stage companies should turn to Atlas Capital, right?
So there's what the market likes, there's the hypes, and is what we like, right? So of course, what's the hype is about today, I'm not going to get into generative AI.
Yes, right? Please don't.
We're going to get simply into what we look at, you know, climate tech here. I think there's a lot of hype about EV mobility, right? Southeast Asia have the biggest amount of motorbikes in the world, right? You will go to Ho Chi Minh City one day, I hope, and you will be stunned to see how many motorbikes there is. It's insane, right? So what about this transition to, you know, no carbon? Right, so EV, electric vehicle, it's a big one, but not only. I think there's a lot of discussions around hydrogen, because EV actually requires a lot of nickel, lithium, cobalt, other very expensive rare earth material, and the life of these batteries is very short. So what do you do with this, right? So it's not something that people realize yet. You know, a lot of investments is into EV right now, but for Atlas Capital, we look at that. We see that this is a short fix, right? So longer fix for us is hydrogen, but also recycling and repurposing of these batteries. We really believe in that. So we've made one of our first investments, small investment into a company that is doing EV batteries recycling. And so this company is based in San Francisco. But they're eager to tap into the Southeast Asian market. And so right now we're working to bring this company by working with a few conglomerates that could be funding their first factory here in Southeast Asia together. So that's one of the example of a sector that we're interested in. It's what we call inevitable, right? I think the largest FDI right now in Southeast Asia is EV. It's insane, right? So you're really going to see probably 15 to 20% of the cars next 10 years in Southeast Asia to be EVs, right? So what do you do with those batteries? Can repurpose them, plug them into residential, commercial buildings, do home energy storage, plug that with solar panel, boom, you got an incredible grid efficiency improvement here, right? Another aspect that I think is capital for Southeast Asia, and we see a lot of hype, but also a lot of investors and conglomerates that are really deploying capital into that space, is agriculture. So not like India, which had their industrial revolution, Southeast Asia just didn't have it, right? So you're eating rice probably from Indonesia or Thailand, and it's really done like 50 years ago or 100 years ago, right? So there is that double leapfrog opportunity in Southeast Asia to do not only net zero agriculture, but also just industrialize it. So you go from like manual agriculture to industrial and then zero together. And so there's a lot of conglomerates, very powerful Fortune 500 companies in that region that are, you know, agri-tech conglomerates. And they're heavily looking at this. So this is something we really believe in. And partially because it's so connected with the pollution in our cities. In fact, probably 60% of the PM2.5, the actual pollutions that we can observe in Vietnam, Thailand, Laos, Myanmar, Cambodia, and Singapore included, is that haze from the burning of that 100 years old agriculture tradition of burning the crops. Right. So by modernizing the agriculture, you can actually reduce the burns and then reduce the pollution. And this pollution is not CO2 climate change directly, but it's a really nefast factor that is really affecting these cities, and that is having impact on the migrations of those people. So it's something very important as well, and it's contributing to decarbonizing those industries if we can make it right. Right. So I think those two are very, very important for the region, and it's something that we have a lot of partners in the coalition who are looking in. And lastly, of course, you know, everything about carbon capture, etc., is very hype. But to be honest, for Southeast Asia, we don't see that really coming. Even though governments, you know, are going to invest into carbon capture solutions, you know, your direct air capture, etc., are very expensive. And if the energy produced to run those machines is gas or coal, doesn't make any sense, right? As of today, in Southeast Asia, 70% to 80% for some countries of the actual energy produced is from coal or gas. So direct air capture doesn't make any sense, right? It only makes sense if you have hydro power or geothermal power, which we don't have here, or nuclear power, which we could have, but somehow it's not a fun, famous thing here for now. So I don't bet heavily on this at all. Now, one of the things I'm quite bullish on, and with Atlas, we're looking at venture build one companies in that space, is blue carbon.
Okay.
So carbon capture using the ocean, which Southeast Asia have a lot of space for this, right? So we're looking at seaweed for carbon capture, which actually absorbs 35 times more carbon than the tree, right?
Wow.
So it's an interesting space for such a marine region, which is Southeast Asia, with so many islands, so many coastal opportunities to leverage on.
Absolutely. The EV is, of course, the space which in Europe and North America is somewhat declining, because so much of venture money was thrown at it. And when the tap was closed last year, then there's a lot of companies in trouble these days, because there's just too many of, especially the e-mobility, kind of the micro-mobility level companies. Yeah, I don't see Bangkok going that way. There is just no roads for scooters, observing as an outsider.
There is. I think the bigger tsunami that Bangkok is going to be a victim, as well as Indonesia and Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh City, is the Chinese EV tsunami. Right? So China have been planning for this for more than 10 years, right? Building all these infrastructure, One Belt, One Road initiative, Eastern Corridor, to actually distribute all these cars, and they are really winning this, right? So in Southeast Asia, I would really see 70% of the EVs next 10 years to be Chinese. And because, you know, China have overproduced already those EVs, you can start to see cemeteries of EVs in China right now. So they really need to quickly sell those two guys here. And so that's really where the EV market is going to be. So you can see very large deals. You know, foreign direct investments are mainly driven by those. So, for example, BYD, the Chinese Tesla, invaded Thailand last year with a joint venture with a very large conglomerate here, which we're working with. It is only going to be like two or three players really dominating that market in Indonesia, Vietnam, and Thailand. And so BYD will be one of them for sure. So that's where we see the EV market. And for us, we just can't play with that, right? It's just too big, right? We're talking about, you know, $10 billion type of deals. And there's no infrastructure here. It's just going to be sales, right? What we see is interesting for a play, hence, as a result, is the infrastructure of that EV market, right? So charging stations, recycling of the batteries, maintenance of the cars, right? So these are like three things you can do. So that's the only space that is less for investors like us. But looking at development, a charging station, it's a lot of infrastructure. So a lot of oil and gas companies in the region, in Singapore, Indonesia, are jumping on this to build that infrastructure. And I'm sure there is a lot of money that will be made on that.
Absolutely. For the startups, I mean, building infrastructure is typically not the startup thing to do. There's not, you know, not too much of innovation to putting up a station to charge something. Of course, there is also venture money going in and you know, kind of startups. There's probably more startup-y thing is probably to work on the technologies for recycling, which is also probably a, you know, massive opportunity. You said you have made an investment in that field, right?
Yep. Yeah, so Posh Robotics is the name of the company. You can check them out on our website. And this is a good example of a truly global effort resumed into one team. The founder is Singaporean from Southeast Asia, but he went to Stanford to do his PhD in robotics and raised money in San Francisco. And now he's looking to build back infrastructure and access to this market in Southeast Asia, right? So you truly see that transaction, right? That two-way. I think this is really what we want to see more. Right, we want to see very smart, resilient founders tapping into where the resources are to then impact positively the actual region. Right, so that's something we really believe in. And again, it's just a matter of how much impact you can make with your limited lifetime. Right, so I think these guys really get it, and so that's why we're really eager to continue helping them to connect with potential partners, clients, and investors here in this region.
Looking forward, I mean, you were speaking a little bit about the future already, plans of different launches, but for Atlas Capital, what are the kind of next big milestones you're writing in your pitch deck?
So there's a few. I think, firstly, the coalition. We started that a month ago. We have 400 members now. But we really want to have quality conglomerates that are ready to be, you know, facilitating and supporting the emergence of that climate tech ecosystem in the region to join us. So our job is to find bankable innovations in Europe or in the US. And that's one of my partner, and she's based there. And my job here is to connect with more conglomerates here to get them to join the coalition. And so that's something that we want to scale. We want to have 1,000 members, and we want to keep these 70% of family offices and conglomerate investors in that group. So 30% of founders are really benefiting from these connections. You know, we boom, get them to talk to $1.5 billion, you know, within a day. If they come here, this is a great opportunity.
Absolutely.
So we're going to continue facilitating events with that coalition, and we're looking to get that coalition to be sustainable by itself by, you know, having a few revenue streams so we don't have to worry. We have a full-time team taking care of that coalition. So that's for next 6 months. Now, with Atlas Nano Fund 1, we're looking to continue growing this small fund so we can do quick seed stage, pre-seed, seed deals. You know, 100K ish for each deal. So we're looking to extend that to another 1 million US so we can do another 10 deals. And this is like yesterday, right? So we're doing that right now. And it's because it's just too bad to see so many of these opportunities and not be able to, you know, even catch some of them, right? And the larger game for us, and that's really what we're doing. That's a real answer of your question, is to work with 5 key conglomerates in the region to help them to source those innovations in the US and Europe, so they can actually join us as a LP for our larger fund, right? So that's what we are working on, looking to structure a larger fund around $25 million to be able to do 40 investments, 70% in the US, Europe, another 30% here in Southeast Asia. And so we're working with 3 conglomerates at the moment. We're looking for a few more. And hopefully these will be joining us on the journey to structuring that new fund probably next year. We don't know when the time is right, but yeah, this is really what we are aiming.
And maybe the last thing, maybe where we should have started, you know, what makes you passionate about this sector? What makes you to, you know, jump up in the morning from the bed and go and, you know, go and change the world?
Well, I guess I've been brainwashed by my parents. My mom was in, you know, like all these hippie Greenpeace, WWF stuff. And she's been annoying me with that stuff for a very long time. I used to hate it and be like, "Mom, stop. Like, come on, you know." And every weekend I call her. She's still thinking, "Oh, you know, we need to save the planet. We're all going to die." This is a very negative, you know, narrative that she's got since I'm young, and I hated it. So what drives me really is to actually have a positive narrative. I think there's too much negativity about climate change, and of course we should worry, but let's look at the positive. Let's look at those people who are actually moving the needle. Let's look at the people who are actually there to take their money. And instead of doing real estate, or instead of doing ETFs, or, you know, investing in Apple or Microsoft, they get the balls to invest in that solutions that potentially going to save us all, right? Let's applaud those people, right? Let's make more videos. Let's talk more, but let's do more podcasts about these people, these investors and these founders who are actually deciding to leave e-commerce to work on climate tech. That's what I care about. That's what excites me, right? And I'm just one of the 1 million people who next 20 years will do that, right? I had the chance to do it a bit early because, you know, I spent 10 years running, I mean, 8 years running the first company as a CEO, and I had an early exit. But there's so many other people who could do that, right? So many people who have the position, they're making enough money to actually invest in that space, right? And really shape, design the future they will leave for their kids, right? There's a lot of people who maybe don't have the money, but they are founders. Instead of starting another, you know, algorithmic trading or another advertising optimization tool with OpenAI, just look at solving something that, you know, your kids will be proud of. right? So that's what excites me. I think I'm a starter. I'm a firecracker, and I've got the chance to firecrack technology e-commerce in 10 years ago. And I think now I want to firecrack this in Southeast Asia. It didn't come just like that. It's a series of events. When I was a student, I met incredible scientists, and we co-created a makerspace in Paris, focused on sustainability. We're a bit early in the game. It was 12 years ago. But those guys really brainwashed me and made me realize the importance of science and hardware, you know, where I was so passionate about software. These guys told me hardware is important. And they've done so much good things since then. Some of the companies that we used to incubate at the time with that makerspace is now a climate tech company worth $100 million, replacing the ink production with bio ink, right? For example, right? Reducing tons and tons of CO2, right? So that was 12 years ago, right? And then lastly, I had an accident during COVID where I almost drowned. Doing spear fishing because of a plastic bag.
Oh.
And that plastic bag, I think, was from, you know, e-commerce delivery. So it was kind of, you know, God sending me a sign. That, okay, you got your small exit now. You got a little bit of money. You're going to just spend it on stupid stuff, or you're going to actually do something with your time and with that money to do a bit more meaning, right? And so they really that before and after moment. I think that was the trigger for me to decide to look and spend next 10 years in that space. So far it's been 2 years, 8 years to go. That's my commitment. But let's see, you know, I think there's a lot that's going to happen next few years, and I think I'm maybe we're maybe a very small group of 400 people now, but you know, just like software has been eating the world, you know, 20 years ago, I think climate tech is going to eat the world because that's the only way forward. Right. We need to adapt to.
I only hope that eating the world is here, like not literally. It's the actually kind of opposite.
I would say climate tech will regenerate the world, right? Exactly. Software have been eating the world. Climate tech will regenerate the world, and so everybody is going to be a climate tech entrepreneur, worker, or investor, because simply companies who are not going to be circular net zero 50 years from now, they're just not going to exist, right? This is a paradigm, economical shift that is happening. And there is, with that, there is that generational wealth that is also transitioning, so that you really have the old world and the new world, right? And there's just no way we can continue doing what we do, right? You can see on plastic, this is very visible, but the invisible things, you know, is CO2. And there's no way we can continue doing that. So the people who actually get it now, the people who are shaping what's the solution to continue to have a nice lifestyle while being more circular, sustainable, and net zero, they're going to be the next trillionaires. It's no wonder Elon Musk is a trillionaire, right? It's just the first of 1,000, right? And that's not my words. This is, you know, the BlackRock CEO words. The next 1,000 billionaires will be in climate tech, right? So I think this is kind of the obvious wave coming. Now the question is, what do you do with this? How do you contribute in your own way, in a meaningful way, with the limited resources and limited time that you have as a human being, right? But I think everybody can contribute, right? And very excitingly, you see a lot of Twitter, Facebook people getting fired in the US, and they're now joining those climate tech companies as a worker. Good, right? This is what I mean, right?
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be just founders or investors. It can be workers, talent, students, artists, right? Scientists.
Good. That's a great point to wrap up this episode. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. And yeah, pleasure to exchange more and having you here in Southeast Asia with us.
Thanks.
Hey there, I'm DC. I host the Rock Podcast, Back to the Arena, The Interviews. It's about a 30-minute podcast where I talk one-on-one with a band who has released new music. You can find us on all the best podcast sites like Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, and more. If you're a rock fan like me, subscribe today to Back to the Arena, The Interviews.
Electric Acid. Today is working for me. Do you believe that for yourself? Hey, I'm Pastor Julie, and I want to empower you through encouragement, inviting you to my podcast, Big Truth Encouragement, where I unpack living a faith-filled life. I created my podcast for the ladies, but gentlemen, you'll gain something too. So I invite you to listen to Big Truth Encouragement on ElectricCast and any platform where you listen to your podcast. ElectricCast.